Hello, and thank you all for joining us. This is From the Newsroom, the weekly podcast presented by the Holland Sentinel. We're coming to you from beautiful downtown Holland this afternoon on Wednesday, March 28th, yes. I believe. Yes. Yep. All the days kind of blur together at this point as tulip time is quickly approaching.
Oh, don't say that word yet.
I am Brian Vernellis, digital director here at the Sentinel, and I'm joined by editor Sarah Leach.
Hello.
And Sarah and I wanted to discuss a interesting panel discussion featuring Indianapolis Star reporter Marissa, and please, Marissa, I know I'm going to butcher your last name here, Kwiatkowski. There we go, Kwiatkowski. So Marissa was part of the team that broke the national story on Larry Nassar and his sexual assault of gymnasts with USA Gymnastics, mm-hmm. Michigan State, and youth gymnastic programs around Michigan.
And probably others.
Yeah. So she was on hand at her alma mater, Grand Valley State. And her discussion was talking mostly about her experience and what journalism does to shine a light for something like this. Mm-hmm. And immediately my mind goes to, this is such a huge story, my mind goes to a movie like Spotlight.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they'll make a movie of this.
A movie like All the President's Men.
Yep.
So...
And we probably should say that this was the first event that was part of a series that they're labeling Community to bring to awareness of the communications programs at GVSU and how important it is to have these kinds of programming and courses of study because they do matter.
Right. And it was fascinating hearing Marissa talk about her experience. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of us from the Sentinel that went over to Grand Rapids to hear her speak. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, you were there. What were your thoughts?
Well, one, I'll say that Marissa is an absolute pro. I mean, she was just, she's kind of a rock star in our world. She is extremely polished. She's very articulate and well-spoken and conducts herself with a certain air of professionalism that is, I don't really see very often for her age. And I don't mean to sound ageist, but she is younger than I am. And, you know, I interview a lot of younger people, and it's very rare to see somebody that is really that on point and on their game. And she talked a little bit about how she received the original tip that involved some sort of, I believe it was a case in Georgia that yes. involved some sort of, it involved the policy that USA Gymnastics had about reporting sexual assault, and that according to the paperwork she reviewed, that people had to be either an eyewitness to an assault, which is obviously extremely rare, or you have to be the person who is assaulted and make some sort of an official declaration with your signature, which obviously would not really apply if you're talking about children. Mm-hmm. Or you have to be the parent of the child who has to come forward and sign said documentation. And I think that those were the only three ways that you could report any sort of allegation or abuse or anything involving USA Gymnastics. And so that was sort of the genesis of the entire story about how a policy, however well-intended, perhaps led to a lot of chronic abuse of the system. And eventually it led to Larry Nassar over in Michigan.
And it's a perfect example of the legwork that's involved. Mm-hmm. And tracking down a story.
Yeah. You obviously, know, this was on a much larger scale, right. A very macro scale, but yes.
Right. Yeah. Again, it goes back to All the President's Men and Spotlight. Yeah. All the President's Men.
And this was like a 2-year story, and they're still reporting on it.
They had to go knocking door to door, basically, mm-hmm. for anybody that worked in that particular office. Spotlight was a great scene where I think Rachel McAdams and Mark Ruffalo go door to door, basically, through the neighborhood.
Yep.
Canvassing, trying to find out, you know, if there's people affected by the parish priest.
Right.
So Marissa had to fly down to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
to obtain these documents, or at least look through them.
I think there was 1,000 pages of documents that she initially had to review.
Right.
And then eventually her editor realized the scope, and she was sort of, you know, I can do it. And the editor said, this is, seems a little bit much for one person. So then eventually they ended up bringing on two additional people from their newsroom to help in sorting through the investigation, tracking down leads, and interviewing sources that eventually ended up with the initial story that was in June of 2016.
Okay. In listening to her retell her experience in the narrative, did anything surprise you?
I think I didn't realize that the Indy Star had as much resources as they did. That sort of struck me as kind of it was bittersweet, because while I was so thrilled that somebody could really do it right and do it well, it's rare to see in this business where something in terms of investigative journalism is well funded outside of the New York Times or the Washington Post or some other, you know,
USA Today,
major conglomerate flagship paper. And IndyStar is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, it is a large major metro,
right.
but I guess I did not realize the scope and the amount of attention and emphasis that they put on this type of reporting. And so that was really awesome to see, and that this wasn't just like a happy accident that, you know, some beat reporter just stumbled across it and just ended up being the story of their life. So it's really nice to see that there are some newspapers and some companies that are trying to do it right.
Makes a great segue, because at one point during the Q&A session, you got up and asked Marissa a question.
Because I think that every respectable media organization wants to do something to make the world a better place and to be a voice for the voiceless and all of the things that we got into journalism originally for. But the reality is that this is it's an industry that faces a lot of financial challenges. And so it's rare that content and the gathering and seeking and investigating of content ends up getting a lot of attention. It's usually about, you know, advertising and subscription rates and, you know, clicks on a website, and then, you know, content ends up being one of the lower priorities. And so I think that every organization, including ours, including me and our team, we always want to do this kind of stuff, but you really have to work so hard in order to do that, to scrape out the time. You'll have to pick away at a project over months in order to get it done right, because you still have to, you know, make the daily sausage, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, when I was hearing her talk, it was just like somebody talking about Journalism Disneyland, you know, 'cause I was like, I want to go to there and I want to experience that at least, you know, once in my career. But, the question that I asked for the benefit of the listeners is, how does a smaller organization pull something like this off? And I think she didn't quite answer the question. I mean, she tried to say, okay, you know, understand your laws, understand what the lay of the land is. But I think that's kind of like the big question mark is, eventually you need people and eventually you need money. So you have to, if you're going to be scrappy, then it's going to require a whole lot of dedication. And that's what we try to do from time to time here.
To that end, I must give you props, because you have really helped focus a lot of our reporters to start producing enterprise pieces. Mm-hmm. In particular, the Title IX package we had in December.
Yep.
2017.
Yep.
We just had a package on community mental health.
Yep.
I know we're still pursuing that angle, pursuing the stories and
still
the many
stories to come on that,
pulling the threads on that, because that is one huge web.
Yeah, it's a complicated
and
mess.
The tentacles that stretch out from that story. I know we've got other enterprises plan for the rest of the year.
Right.
So we're dipping our toe
into
the large pond.
Well, there's you know, depending on what topic it is, and how easy it is to bring the content together, that also makes the difference. Like the Title IX series took a couple of months to put together, because you had to track down a lot of people in a lot of different positions, and you have to wait for people to get back to you. You have to, that was broken up between three reporters. When you're coordinating that amount of information, it takes a while to kind of sort through it all, what makes sense, scale it down, edit it down so that the reader doesn't get overwhelmed. How much information do you give them? How do you visualize it to keep things interesting? I mean, you got to balance all of that stuff.
Right.
An example of a larger, the biggest project that we ever did was the housing series that was two summers ago now. And that took 6 months to put together. And we had to file FOIAs. We had to ask for information that nobody had ever asked before from the city of Holland, from the county. We were trying to figure out like the poverty levels, the ALICE threshold numbers, which is, you know, if you're working but not quite making it, not quite making enough. Where do these people live? How does that affect their housing? You know, so we had to do all of this data analysis. And so if you got a story like that, that just delays it even more. So I mean, it can get really. I mean, sometimes you have to be really in it for the long haul.
Are you able to apply lessons that you've learned from the past into these future projects?
Well, I think that in the beginning, the housing one was the first one that I tackled. And right. I think I learned a lot of lessons where, you know, I'm the kind of editor who tries to inspire the people to, you know, to do the things that, you know, to try to motivate them, incentivize them instead of saying, you know, do X, Y, and Z. But I think one of the things that I've learned is that it's okay to take a little bit of direction and say, listen, you know, I really feel like, you know, we need to focus on this area over here. I don't, as I'm putting myself in the reader's shoes, I still have questions regarding this part of the topic, or, okay, so theoretically, what happens if this scenario unfolds? And so, you know, you have like this discussion where the reporter says, oh, I didn't think about that. And so you had to do a lot of that in order to make sure that you're anticipating that the reader is getting everything that they theoretically would want out of that coverage.
I think the C word, context, is...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I learned that when I was... Oh my God, I'm going to sound really old here, but I learned it when...
You're older than I am.
I know. You know, when we have a young staff here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that's part of the
learning
process.
Yeah, and as I got older, it becomes a little bit more of a natural fit, you know, as the age gap widens. You're like, okay, I don't have this problem anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
of leading a little bit more.
Right. But just, helping them understand there's a context and, like you said, a bigger picture, I think, involved. Listening to Marissa, are you at least inspired? You came out fired up.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I had like eight ideas that I wanted to do. I think, I have to be realistic, obviously, about my expectations and in the place that we work at. But, you know, one of the things that I that was talked about a lot is that Marissa specifically said, trying to write stories, she does a lot of investigative pieces. This just happened to be about sexual assault and just happened to lead in that direction. But she writes about a lot of topics, and she said you have to try to find a way to get the reader to care. And she's done a lot of social services investigative pieces about the welfare system, about healthcare systems. And, you know, sometimes when you're talking about those topics, they affect so many people. But it is really challenging to try to get people to buy in and to care. And you have to try to find an entry point to, you know, you got to find a person, you got to find somebody who's passionate, you've got to have a great lead, you've got, you know, you have to do this stuff to really catch their attention and bring them in, still while being completely factually accurate. And that's a tall order sometimes when you're talking about healthcare or, you know, state policy type pieces. And that's one of the big challenges that we had with Title IX and mental health, is that these are big picture stories, and you don't always get people to click on the stories or to read the stories because they're, you know, some people just, you know, aren't, it's just not calling to them.
Right. In light of her discussion, how do you hope to parlay that into inspiration for the staff. You know, you said you're a leader.
Yeah.
Definitely. Conveying that, though, to a young staff can be a challenge.
Well, you know, just yesterday I was talking with Jake Allen. He's our government reporter, county and state level government. And so he's working on following up on the mental health series. And there are a lot of interesting news that's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks about that particular topic. And so he actually met with me yesterday, and he's talking to me about, I've got this avalanche of stuff, and here's this thing and here's that thing, and I don't know what to do with this, and I don't know how to, you know, how do I write this story? And I said, well, we're talking about a topic that is really, it's a lot of numbers, it's a lot of, you know, droning on about policy. You have to find a person who can explain it to me in layman's terms so that I understand it on a human level. Don't talk to me about actuaries and data analysis. Like, yep. Just tell me in plain speak, what does it mean? How does it affect me? And then you have to find somebody who can speak to it passionately. And, you know, find a patient, find a yep. director who's like, oh no, this is a disaster, or this is the most incredible thing ever. You got to find somebody who can talk to it on an emotional level if you're going to connect with people. And then I tried to explain to him, this is not one story. I'm not going to put 70 inches of copy about, you know, no one's going to read that. So I said, I think the best way to approach this is there's so many layers to this. I think that we just need to do a series of shorter stories in order to, I think that the readers will appreciate that better. I think you're going to reach the audience better. So you have to have all of those conversations. And I'm looking at his face and he's like, oh, okay. You know, because, you know, he's a recent graduate and, you know, they just don't have the life experience to understand that kind of context yet.
Yeah. Well, if you haven't, I know we did, Marissa met with a few of us after the discussion. Mm-hmm. We did a quick little video of her.
And she worked with you.
She did.
Prior. Where did you work with her?
We worked together at the Times in Northwest Indiana.
And you guys took a selfie.
In Munster, Indiana. And that project she mentioned she worked on in Indiana, mm-hmm. I was able to do at least one video, mm-hmm. and it was exactly like you said. We wanted to get a face.
Yep.
The story she was working on concerned children welfare, mental health, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And because Indiana is so strapped, a lot of times parents have to...
this was that story.
Yeah, I have have to say that they're incapable of caring for their child.
Yeah.
So that the state can come and put him in, I think the one family we interviewed, they had a son that was in a facility downstate, Indiana, and they only saw him, I think, maybe a couple times a week.
Right.
But it's essentially the family is saying to the state of Indiana.
The insurance, private insurance wouldn't pay for it.
Thank you.
But government insurance wouldn't pay for it because you had private insurance, and so they were caught in a loop.
Yeah.
And so they literally were saying, we're neglecting our child in order to qualify them for the care that they needed, which is just so sad.
So that was we shot a video interviewing parents that had to do that for their son.
Yeah.
You know,
but I bet that caught people.
I hope so. I hope so. And there was, you know, behind the scenes, there was talk of, you know, we could do a documentary on this, mm-hmm. this family.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of floating around out there for a while, mm-hmm. that we would do something, you know, full length.
Right, right.
So, but Marissa was such a pro on that. And with any investigative story that she works on, she's phenomenal. So, any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Well, I just think that, you know, for the listeners out there, I think that, you know, not to sound too self-serving, but I think all of the newspapers and media outlets all try to do this. And that's why it's important to support local journalism, because we're really the only people that are doing this sort of thing.
Right.
Just think about, if there was no investigative team at IndyStar, would we know about Larry Nassar right now? And that's kind of really scary to think about. The same thing about the Spotlight and the Boston, you know, was it Globe or Herald? I can't
I want to say it was the Herald.
Sorry that I'm bungling that. But, you know, if they hadn't stumbled across the whole Catholic Church sexual abuse scandal, you know, where would we be? All of this, and it just happens that I'm hitting on, you know, two top, you know, that are part of the same, under the same umbrella theme. But there's a lot of that kind of stuff that happens. Government corruption, not to say that there's anything, you're not always looking for something nefarious, but sometimes, even on a smaller scale, when we produced our housing series, we didn't see immediate change. But we started to see a lot more conversations that were happening.
Yeah.
We started to see some efforts with nonprofits to form a group. I was even invited to come to a discussion with one of those groups with the Fifth Third Bank.
It was one of the major points in the last mayoral
election. It has been a theme over the past year. And so, you know, when we reported the story, we were getting the response from the city and from the county, either it wasn't a problem and it's a crisis that you're literally just inventing to, you know, to be dramatic, or this is a regional problem and we can't be expected to do anything as individual entities in order to solve it. And now the conversation has completely changed and people are feel a lot more motivated to work together. And I think it's because of the efforts of hammering on the topic, showing how it affects people. We see these people day in and day out being affected by this. We even as a staff, we hire people who can't afford to live here.
Mm-hmm.
And we pay pretty decently. But as singles and young, they can't make it. So those kinds of issues, not necessarily, you know, big and scandalous, but they're important and they affect a lot of people. I would encourage readers and listeners to try to keep that in perspective, that that is why we have community newspapers, that that really is the core mission, and to try to keep supporting that effort.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sarah. I think that will just about that will just about do it. On behalf of Sarah Leach, editor here at The Sentinel, I'm Brian Vernellis, and we will see you next week on From the Newsroom.